Welcome back to Canucks Talk. You're on Sportsnet 650. Jamie Dodd, Thomas Trance here, broadcasting live from the Kintech Studio. 650, 650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line, Metro Vancouver's trusted choice for contractors and rental warriors for over 50 years. Visit them at one of their three locations to serve you or online at dunbarlumber.com. And Drance, I understand you did not cut out and run to enjoy Montreal during the show. You are, in fact, here.
I hope I'm here.
You are. You are here.
Let's go.
I got you.
We are in business for the time being, my friend. Let's make it count.
Yes, absolutely. And we'll get Kevin Woodley on the line here momentarily. And in fact, we have Kevin Woodley on the line right now. He is a presentation of White Rock Hyundai, and always a pleasure to have Woodley from InGoal Magazine and NHL.com. Kevin, happy New Year. Thanks for doing this.
Yeah, no, my pleasure. I'm glad to be back home driving the White Rock Hyundai after a beast of a rental, which was hard to move around down in the fun and sun of the islands over the Christmas break. So very much enjoying life back in the lower mainland with the White Rock Hyundai. The Tucson, very nimble for an SUV and yet still fits all my gear, Jamie.
There
very
you go.
Have that.
Although that's got to be like the only reason you're happy to be back home, though, right? I mean, don't try to sell us too hard on the idea that you're happy to be back from Hawaii.
The singular reason that I am happy to be back is because of driving my White Rock Hyundai Tucson. Everything else is basically a negative.
That sounds about right.
Yeah, although the team's on the road, so it's not like I've got a busy schedule. I basically got home overnight, dropped the wife and kids off at like 9 a.m. off a red-eye flight and went straight to the Nashville Predators morning skate. So, and then now they're gone for 2 weeks, so leisurely at-home work.
There you go. So the Canucks, as you said, gone for 2 weeks on starting this five-game road trip in Montreal. And just looking at the goaltending situation around the Canucks, Thatcher Demko leaves that game against Seattle with back spasms, they later call it. Now, he's on the trip. It doesn't seems like a possibility to back up tonight, but probably not likely. But, you know, the fact that they're even talking about it seems to suggest he'll be available at some point on this trip. And, you know, I think everyone had that same reaction when he left the game against Seattle. Like, uh-oh, is this the knee? Is this the leg? What's going on here? Back spasms. What was your reaction to hearing back spasms? What does it tell us about Thatcher Demko and his availability and what we should expect for the rest of the season?
Well, one thing is I don't think I'd be starting him in a backup role unless he's 100%, right? Because much like the risk they ran of having him play the first two games coming off the knee injury in a backup role, there's that chance you end up going into the game. And if you've ever had a back issue, the last thing you want to do is have to go from 0 to 100 in short notice if something were to happen to Kevin Lankinen, right? You're sitting there, everything's tensing up, and now all of a sudden you go in. And I kind of made the same argument for the first two games where they had him on the bench as a backup. As much as I understand a lot of the other elements that are benefits for sort of getting him used to being back with the team and into a game environment, the risk seemed somewhat unnecessary, right? Like the idea of going in cold. And I would think that applies to back spasm as well. Like, listen, as much as it was a relief for people probably to hear Tocchet come out in Seattle and say that it was just back spasms and, you know, downplayed it as a 24 to 48, we'll see how it goes. And certainly it is relative to the possibility of re-aggravating the knee injury. They're no joke either, right? Like as somebody who's had back surgery, like that's not fun. And typically they affect, you know, the tendency is for everything runs through that chain, right? Like back into the glutes, into the front of the hips and down the legs. It's something that you want to make sure is 100% before you come back. And the fact they're even considering him backing up tells me it can't be that far off. And that's probably a welcome news for a team that hasn't had much good news this season when it comes to the injury.
Yeah, it's been pretty wild. And now with the latest Dakota Joshua going on IR. So he'll miss some time again here. So Demko had played seven games before the back spasms. I mean, I think we all expected there to be a bit of rust, right? We weren't expecting him to be, you know, vintage peak Thatcher Demko right off the bat. What was, you know, how would you evaluate those seven games for Thatcher Demko?
They've kind of been hard to evaluate because so many of them have been some of their worst defensive performances of the year. And I wasn't able to pull the numbers up, much like yourselves with Drance being in Montreal. Technical difficulties was the order of the day, getting onto the ClearSight analytics website just before I came on air. But when I checked last, he had some of the lowest expected save percentage numbers in the league. Like certainly in the bottom 20 out of 80 goalies that had played. And, you know, that's a pretty tough defensive environment to judge somebody in, especially in a small sample. Now, he'd underperformed it to a certain degree, but I think there, you know, we've sort of seen at the eye test those moments in games where there are really difficult saves and he's making them in bunches, but you can only do so much. And so that's been a bit of a surprise to me, as much as they haven't rediscovered their defensive identity this season to the level they had last year. It's been at its worst kind of in those games where he's been in net. And I'd argue the first period against Seattle was one of those again. So they haven't really given him a real fighting chance. There's been some goals I'm sure he'd like back. Obviously you think of the Beniers one here against Seattle, and then the first one in Seattle. But you know, to me, that's just some of those timing issues, some of those mid-range shot issues. Actually, if you look back historically, I think they've been overlooked because of his dominance in all other areas. But if you were to pick out, and the key word here is relative, a relative weakness, mid-range wrist shots are kind of one of them. There is at times a tendency to get caught in between stances and moving. And I think you add that to the timing required to be spot on with that, and the fact he hadn't played in so long, those were probably where, you know, the odd goal that had a certain odor might creep up. I mean, he's just so damn good down low and in tight. I would argue the best in the league, and the numbers back that up, that you're always going to have a quote unquote relative weakness. Like Hellebuck, so good at everything, and yet on slot line plays, laterals east west, he's average, you know, from an NHL perspective. He's like an average goalie, and compared to everything else he does, that's a weakness. So, you know, some of those mid-range ones that have gone in on him, as much as they've raised eyebrows, if you look back historically over the last couple of years, those have been some of the goals that have gone in on him anyway. So I just think the more time you get and a chance to get him comfortable in the net, however that rotation looks, at the end of the day, he's your best chance come playoff time. As good as Lankinen has been, Demko at his best is another level. And now it's just a matter of getting him healthy and playing at that level and finding a workload that allows him to sustain it down the stretch and be healthy in the playoffs.
Kevin, what can you tell us about Dobich, the star goaltender coming up for the Habs and on a serious heater of late? Is this real? Is there something here for Habs fans and you know, observers around the league to get excited about?
Well, first off, I haven't checked. Is he starting tonight?
No, it's Montembeau, exactly, I believe.
Sure. I still want to know about Dobich, though.
Yeah, no, I mean, honestly, I, you know me, Thomas, I don't like to blow smoke. If I had a detailed scouting report, I'd be all over it, but I'm certainly not going to pull one out of my posterior. And I don't have a ton of great information on him, although, you know, between him and the kid at BU, like, they've got some legit prospects in goal coming. Guys that I think have higher ceilings than the two that they started this season with, in Caden Primo, and even Sam Montembeau, as much as, you know, Montembeau's on Canada's Four Nations team, and as good as he's been at times, there's an inconsistency still to his game, a real up and down, hot or cold, hit or miss, that he's kind of always struggled a little bit with. So I think the upside of these young guys coming up, that's the thing though, like having success like this out of the gate, there are so many guys in the American League that have the talent and skill to do it. And the Habs are clearly starting to put some things together defensively over the last couple of weeks. Like, they've been very hit and miss in terms of what they give up. And so you can get short-term heaters out of guys, because the reality is, much like me, there isn't a pre-scout on it. Like, there isn't a pre-scout that we've paid much attention to. Look at Artur Shelov's, right? Like, until the playoffs, that book didn't exist, and he was playing so sporadically that nobody was in a rush to write it. You get into the playoffs, and all of a sudden, you know, in terms of managing traffic and things that are, you know, he's not alone in that regard, struggling with that element of the game early in your NHL career, but they become items that other teams cling to and go after. And so the regular season starts, and the Calgary Flames are clearly targeting it in his first start in the first game of the season. That never would have happened without the playoff run. And so for these young goalies coming up for the Habs, I don't know that they've had a taste of that yet, where teams are really trying to break down their game and go after those, again, relative weaknesses compared to the things they do well. So probably too early to get overly excited. I think a lot of the excitement in Montreal is over sort of the next guy up after the college season ends. And, you know, based on, again, not what I've seen, but the people I've talked to, that's where the long-term excitement should be for Habs fans.
Pivoting away from goaltending, I'm just curious to get your take on what you're making of, you know, the way that this Canucks team, every single Hockey Night in Canada broadcast, every single big national podcast. I mean, the Canucks appear to be the biggest story in hockey. What do you make of all the noise that surrounds this team? Because honestly, I mean, with the possible exception of, you know, Lafair Boudreau and the end of his tenure, I just can't remember it being this loud around the club, you know, in my 5 years or 5.5 years back covering this team.
Well, later this month, I hit 25 years. So, and I'm kind of with you. Now that also means I'm old enough to have forgotten much of it. So, and obviously things have changed, right? Like this is the social media era and everything's different now compared to what quantified as noise, you know, back in the days of Brian Burke talking about, you know, dropping a quarter into a telephone that, you know, like a telephone booth that doesn't even exist anymore in one phone call, right? Like those types of things. So, there's been noise here before. I think of around the Wongo and the Heritage Classic as an example, and what followed from that. And yet, I'm with you. It feels louder now than it has in a long time. A lot of it is self-inflicted, which is the puzzling thing. Like, I think the noise had died down, and then obviously the interview with Alvin, and it's right back up again. And maybe that's on purpose to put some feet to the fire internally. But I'm kind of with you. Let's put it this way. Like, I'll put my NHL.com hat on. There was a lot of buzz around this team last year, and it kept me very gainfully employed as somebody who got paid by the story. But obviously, with working for NHL.com, there are certain stories we touch and certain stories we don't. And this year, there's just as much noise around the team, and I'm not writing those stories. Outside of the injuries and guys coming back and guys leaving and things like that, so I'm not getting paid for these ones. And that's the difference. And so how much of that is, you know, things that may have been there but weren't an issue when everybody's playing well and winning are now in the spotlight because they're not. And how much of that them not playing well is because of the underlying issues. I just think for whatever reason, most of the noise comes from outside too, Thomas, right? Like we've discussed this.
Yep.
It dies down, then something happens, and then self-inflicted in this last case, and then nationally, like that's where it comes from. It comes from a lot of, as you said, the national podcast, and it leads Hockey Night in Canada, and then we as the locals have to go ask about it, and then we become the bad guys. And so it's an interesting, I mean, I really don't care one way or the other in terms of how the job goes, but it's become an interesting dynamic, and I would describe how it's affected the dynamic in the locker room, which, and again, this is probably just me being old, but I preferred the old days when you would walk into the room and per the CBA and NHL rules, everybody was in their stall and you picked who you thought you needed to talk to that night. And for the most part, the scrum moved around to the obvious candidates. Now it's predetermined, everybody at the front of the room, who do you want to talk to? Everybody, for the most part, talks to the same people because there's nobody else left in the room. And I think the combination of the outside noise and the angle of it with that very confrontational feeling, front of the room, all cameras, spotlight on you, has just created a really negative vibe in there, at least when we're in there. Doesn't mean it exists when we're not in there, but when we're in there, it's the most negative, most, you know, frankly, at times, I hesitate to use the word toxic, but it feels that way. And there's this just, I don't know. It's just the nature of the way those interactions with us have been set up. Now, to me, that's kind of changed a lot of that.
And, you know, I think you're right about just the volume of the noise being greater now, certainly than it has been in the last several seasons. But I will say, you know, on JT Miller, this isn't the first time we've heard his name pop up in trade rumors. It's been kind of an annual thing, except with the exception of last season when the team was rolling. And I think what I'm trying to kind of figure out, and I think a lot of fans are trying to figure out as well, is it just noise, or is there something that has actually changed internally that makes the idea of, you know, trading a player like JT Miller or even Elias Pettersson more plausible than it has been in the last couple of years, right? Because I think Drance and I were talking last week, and there is almost an element of the boy who cried wolf to this, right? Where it's like, oh, JT Miller to the Rangers, it's on again, and then it never ends up happening. Do you have like a gut feel? Is this more real, or is it just the noise has gotten out of control?
I think the noise has gotten to the point where it's hard not to have it feel more real. Does that make sense?
Absolutely. Like I think that's where I'm at too.
Even as one of the people in the room, we don't know. But, you know, when the general manager's on there, you know, talking about, you know, I can't remember the exact words, so I don't want to put them in his mouth, but like, you know, openly discussing that, you know, trades might be an option here. That makes it feel more real. Mm-hmm. I think the noise around Pettersson and Miller's relationship in particular, because it's always been there, and you don't need to be a psychologist to know how different to people they are. I think they've even talked about it, right, in the past. But the noise ramped up again when the captain acknowledged it as something he had to manage and deal with, when the coach acknowledged it on the same day as something he had to manage and deal with. It's sort of made that element of it, even though it wasn't a secret to anyone who was around the group, it made that element of it more real. And I think on the Pettersson front, you know, to me, whether it's that, like, I don't even think you need it to have anything to do with the relationship with JT Miller. Like, at the end of the day, the price went up, the ticket went up, the performance has gone down. And so that noise is going to be there. And I thought the comments from Alvin were, you know, obviously pretty pointed about how it's gone since then. And, you know, I know there were teammates in the locker room. Like, it went pretty south in the playoffs, right? And there were guys in that locker room that were sort of looking around like, you know, and one of them, you know, one of the phrases that was put to me by someone that was in that room was, like, you felt like, is he even trying? And so if your teammates are looking at it and asking that question, then I think that's where that noise comes from so much as just the JT Miller thing.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. And that's, as you said, when you hear that kind of question from a player in the room, that's pretty significant during
teammate,
the playoffs.
That's pretty strong.
Yeah.
That's really strong.
That's very, very strong. And that's the kind of thing that if those questions keep cropping up, eventually the situation gets untenable, right? You can't have that be a legitimate question in the minds of teammates at the most significant part of the year, multiple years in a row. Like, you know what I mean? That's the kind of thing that can spur a blockbuster type of deal along.
Well, and here's the interesting part is, I guess the no trade makes it a topic of conversation in the immediate, like right now, because there's an expiry on when you can actually make this deal. But the irony is that, like, if you look at, like, say, Mitch Marner in Toronto and all the questions about playoff performance and long term and things like that, like, at least he got several kicks at the can. This is one bad playoff performance. And their first trip into the playoffs with Pettersson went really, really well. And obviously I know it was playoffs with an asterisk because of the environment, because of the COVID nature and the bubble season. But it just feels like this is the kind of conversation that exists around Marner all the time in Toronto, right? And it's constant. In any slump, it sort of reemerges. And it feels like we've just gotten to it a lot sooner and a lot quicker here. And again, the Miller relationship stuff brings another dynamic to it. But I think at the end of the day, this is about a guy who's getting paid at a top five level, who disappeared in the playoffs, who disappeared at the start of the season afterwards, and some people asking some serious questions about which guy you're going to get when things matter the most again. And geez, I don't know, given the amount of talent and the abilities of an Elias Pettersson and given how much of a joy he is to watch when he's at the peak of his powers, I'd sure want to see at least one more playoff before I knee-jerk and make a decision that makes him not a part of your future. That's for sure.
Kevin, for what it's worth, on the road, it's still an old an old school feeling in the locker room, which is welcome.
Oh, see, I need a travel budget, Thomas, because I miss that so much.
Although it's not all glamorous, my friend, I had multiple cancellations, which is why I was not at practice yesterday. Took me 28 hours to get to Montreal, which is not normal.
I say that, and then I would not trade what I do for what you guys do for the world. It's always, I don't think people understand, and now the broadcast crew has to do it as well, which leaves me shaking my head, but that's another story for another day. I don't think people understand how difficult it is to keep up with a team that charters everywhere when you're flying commercial.
Yeah, it's not glamorous.
No.
the way things are trending right now, right, where for the meantime, and, you know, it's a long season, and other teams will have their own spills and moments, just as the Canucks have over the course of the past few weeks. But the Canucks have kind of lost touch for the time being with, you know, that sort of tier of Pacific Division teams, Edmonton and LA, and obviously Vegas, who are one of the top teams, if not the top team by point percentage in the league, as we talk today. When you look at the other teams behind the Canucks in the West, whether it's St. Louis, Utah, Calgary, which of those clubs look to you like a credible threat? Or do you think the Canucks, even if they've used some of their early season margin for error here, do you think the Canucks are in part going to be saved by the lack of juice from some of their competitors?
Yeah, I mean, I guess it depends on whether they can at least keep treading. Like, I'm curious to see how this road trip goes, right? Like, especially depending on who they get back and when, you know, can they tread water even as they have been basically for the last, like, you know, they haven't won consecutive games since December 1st. And yet, since then, they're NHL 500, 5-5-5. And so now things get more difficult. So you go on this trip, and if you tread water along the same pace, I don't know that any of those teams below you leapfrog you or make significant gaps. But if you go on this road trip and it's a tough one and you come back with one win in five games, maybe this conversation changes. I still think that the Canucks, with their healthy bodies and with their fastball and with a floor that has risen dramatically under Rick Tocchet in terms of how they defend, and that slipped too, right? Like, it's still top 10, but last year it was top 3. And I think some of that is, you know, and I know you had this in your notes the other day, like talking about the fit of some of the guys they've brought in. Even some of the guys they've brought in that have fit offensively haven't necessarily given them what they expected defensively. And that's been a bit of an uphill battle. And maybe part of that was the way they approached training camp with a focus on rush and all that type of stuff. But at the end of the day, they've never gotten back to where they were defensively last year, which is what made me so bullish on them in the playoffs, because the underlying numbers typically are the type that bode well when the postseason starts. So you're kind of assuming they can get back to that, and then I don't think there's a problem. But if they keep treading water like this out of those group, the one I worry most about is probably Utah. There's a lot of talent there. I think Andre Tournier is a hell of a coach. The one caveat is, they've been propped up by goaltending even more than the Canucks. Like, Carl Vemelka's numbers are top 5 in the league adjusted save percentage. And if they were getting anywhere near the same out of Connor Ingram, or even what he was giving them for the previous two seasons when he was healthy before his recent absence because of injury, they'd be ahead by now. And so if Ingram comes back and starts to match what Vemelka's doing, and like I said, Vemelka's been outstanding, then they're a team, as much as the fact that relying on goaltending gives you pause, also means that if they keep getting that goaltending, they could be a problem. So Calgary, I don't know if they can keep this up. I doubt it. And what was the other one?
St. Louis.
It's all fuzzy. Yeah, I don't worry much about St. Louis. I mean, they could get on a heater. They've done it before, absolutely. They've gotten a bump out of the coaching change. They're getting good average goaltending out of Binnington, but there's been a bump in the last month where he's starting to play better. And Hofer's been you know, overlooked as what he's giving them as a very young backup new to the league. He's given them some really good minutes. So, yeah, I mean, at the end of the day, there's three teams there, and all it takes is one of them to get on a hot streak, right? And that should worry you, because the way things are going of late, it's fair to question, at least question, whether the Canucks have a hot streak to match in them.
Kevin, great stuff. Really appreciate it. We'll chat again in a couple weeks.
Sounds good, guys.
That is Kevin Woodley on Sportsnet 650, brought to you by White Rock Hyundai. Visit the showroom on King George in White Rock or whiterockhyundai.com. We got to take a break. Kyle Bukauskas from Hockey Night in Canada and the 32 Thoughts podcast. He joins us next here on Canucks Talk, Sportsnet 650. Welcome back to Canucks Talk here on Sportsnet 650. Jamie Dodd, Thomas Trance on a Canucks game day. We're broadcasting live from the Kintec studio. Kintec Footwear and Orthotics working together with you in step. 650. 650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. Canucks are in Montreal beginning a five-game road trip. 4:30 game time. This is an Amazon one, so not on traditional TV, but of course Batch and Randeep will have the call here on Sportsnet 650, and of course we'll have full pregame coverage here as well. I believe Canucks Central gets going right after us with the Canucks out east, so Dan and Sat will take over, and they'll have you set until puck drop against the Montreal Canadiens. We're going to get Kyle Bukauskas on the phone here momentarily, of course, from Hockey Night in Canada and the 32 Thoughts podcast. And boy, they have been talking a lot of Canucks, as have most NHL media outlets recently. And right now we are joined, as I said, from Hockey Night in Canada and the 32 Thoughts podcast. He is Kyle Bukauskas. Kyle, thank you as always for making time for us today. How are you?
Hey, really good, gentlemen. How are you two doing?
We're doing pretty well. Happy New Year. And, you know, I know your co-host's self-imposed moratorium on talking about the Canucks did not last that long on 32 Thoughts. I think at this point you guys got to lean like all the other way and get like a sponsored regular segment dishing on the Canucks on 32 Thoughts. Just go all in on it.
I think that would, judging by, you know, the reaction anytime we've discussed Vancouver at any other point, I think it would be an easy one to sell, I would tell you that. But, yeah, gosh, there's not many New Year's resolutions that would have had a shorter lifespan than Elliott's self-imposed moratorium. It was unbelievable how quickly that undid itself.
Yeah, and as he pointed out, look, what are you going to do? You know, Patrick Elvin comes out, gives the interview. He does. It's the kind of thing you have to comment on. And, you know, Elvin, in that interview with Ian McIntyre, he left the door open to potentially trading Elias Pettersson. You know, we've heard that teams are calling and the Canucks are listening on JT Miller as well. And the question I keep coming back to is, do I actually buy it, right? Do I buy that they would be willing to trade one of these players, especially in season, or is this simply a case of management trying to send a message, trying to light a fire under two of their key players? Where do you come down? Do you think this is, you know, kind of that mess, just purely message sending, or do you think they could actually do it, trade one of JT Miller or Elias Pettersson?
I mean, I don't think it comes this far without it actually being some kind of a possibility. And that's just me kind of looking back at it from 30,000 feet. Obviously, you know, having a chance to talk with my co-host as much as I do, you get a bit of a better sense of what's going on and just the chatter around the league, of course. But, you know, I really think like how they play here is ultimately going to dictate how everybody feels and if this is past the point of no return or if there's still a path to reconciliation here internally. You know what I mean? Because, you know, we know Pettersson's not playing here tonight against Montreal. We'll see about the Vancouver captain in Quinn Hughes. But, you know, you look at a big game tonight in Montreal, national spotlight on Amazon Prime, Scotiabank Wednesday Night Hockey this week. They're in Washington. Then they go to Carolina, and then they're in Toronto on Hockey Night in Canada this Saturday. There's going to be a lot of eyeballs on Vancouver over the next little bit. You know, park the whole drama scenario off the ice. There's going to be a number of people beyond the norm watching what they're doing on the ice. And, you know, certainly there was some things that I think Canuck fans maybe weren't thrilled about seeing in their shutout loss to Nashville that past Friday at home. And I think now we're really going to see here, I believe, over the next few games, the play is, I think, my sense and just a guess, is really going to dictate and tell us a lot about how this team feels and where, you know, whether it's, you know, Patrick Alvin and Jim Rutherford and how this group as a whole decides to take it from this point onward.
Kyle, can you remember an analogous storyline in this sport? And in particular, you know, I can't remember it being this loud around this team in the 6 years that I've been covering it. And, you know, given like Lafair Boudreau, the way the Benning era ended, you know, it's not as if it's been quiet or placid covering this team. And yet I think what makes this different is that it keeps resurfacing. There's almost no fuel from the principals directly. And so it kind of just feels like a vaporous story, like a very unique one to kind of wrap your hands around, I guess.
Totally. And there's been, yeah, as you say, it comes up and then it dips beneath the surface and then it comes up again. And you look at, you know, yes, we saw those couple of days there when it was Pettersson and Miller, and they both did their version of throwing cold water on it, and that was totally fine. But you've got, you know, the head coach, the captain, and now the GM all alluding to the fact that, you know, this has been a problem. And that all adds to why this is, you know, clearly still a talking point here too. Like, I remember Drance, because it was right. They had just come to Ottawa. Vancouver did a couple of years ago when the whole Boudreau scenario, really caught fire and took off. So I remember, you know, that morning at the rink at the Canadian Tire Center in Kanata and the reaction from that. And then it just kind of felt like, you know, it was Big Ben that whole week. And then, you know, it was just a feeling of matter of time from that point onward until the change was ultimately made here. But, you know, with how hot it has gotten, you know, a number of times here. Certainly I'm trying to think back, you know, growing up not too far from that market on Vancouver Island. I mean, I know as a kid, like so much of it, you're just watching the games. I know it, as years went on and you started to pay a little more attention of, you know, what was going on off the ice, contract discussions, who was getting traded, was there a coach on the hot seat? So I'm trying to remember any other time for me where it would come close to this. And I also think part of it too is because, you know, this team in you know, it was and still is, I think, expected and, you know, believe when this is when they are, you know, at the peak of their parts, this is a team that can contend for a Stanley Cup. And I don't believe, you know, that's a reach when everyone is playing at their highest level and you've got a fair amount of good health, because we saw how they pushed Edmonton less than a year ago. And I think, you know, now the fact that it's at the situation here, like, it's just, gosh, it's really hard to wrap my head around. And, you know, as I said on the pod, like, I don't profess to know truly what's gone on or is going on behind closed doors there with the Canucks. So, you know, maybe there's something that is, you know, just past the point of no return. And there's no way to try to solve this with who's already there internally. But it just really is difficult to believe that it has come to this, because you know, this is life. Sometimes you don't always get along with the people that you're around every day or 5 or 6 days a week for your job. But, you know, especially when you've got a situation like Vancouver, you can see how great it can be and the potential to be even greater. You know, it's really too bad if it gets to the point where they decide, you know, there's just no way it can work with the current dynamic and construction here of it all, because, you know, I would be, to put it mildly, just incredibly infuriated if I'm a Vancouver fan. And this is kind of where we're at, because finally they're on the upward trajectory after so many kind of false starts here. Really, you could argue since the President's Trophy in 2012.
Yeah, the reason that I keep thinking this metastasizes and becomes something else, right, is that we've seen this team's, like, battle level, competitive level, consistency waver. And I don't mean inconsistency in terms of results. That's normal in hockey. I mean inconsistency in terms of, wow, they're really dialed, shutting out the Florida Panthers, and what is this team giving up seven breakaways to the St. Louis Blues? I think that has also added to it, because there's been a level to which people are trying to figure out what's going on, and then there's this layer of chatter, and that all sort of fuels this intrigue. Has the last 6 weeks, what you've seen and what you've heard, what you've talked about, has it dented in any way your optimism about this group's potential?
I guess a little bit, only because we just didn't expect this. And again, is it purely because of, you know, what's been the center point, the centerpiece of a lot of this conversation of, you know, why things aren't meshing with Vancouver, you know, two of their best players, not seeing eye to eye, and the personalities clashing a little bit. I mean, maybe, but I just, it's hard to, because we've seen what it looks like when this group is at their best. Now, I mean, of course, there's been some changes, you know, roster wise, you know, last April and May compared to, you know, January of this year. So that changes things a little bit. But you know, when it comes to the principal characters here, they're all still here. So I guess, you know, maybe we were wrong a little bit, you know, for those in our assessment going into the year that thought, like, this team is could be a real threat, and you know, whether it's them in Edmonton or Dallas or who you pick as your you know, top teams in the West going in, you know, they haven't shown it, and that was, I mean, beyond of course Alvin's comments about Pettersson, and you know, anything is possible in Ian McIntyre's column. You know, when you got your general manager there saying, you know, we're just like, he's not sure what he's going to get from his group, on a game to game basis, in terms of how they're playing, you know, beyond as you say, Thomas, like, yes, the results are not always going to be what you want it to be. That's 82 games of a National Hockey League season for you. But, when that's how your general manager is feeling what he says, you know, near the halfway point of the season, like that's a problem. And maybe is forcing, you know, the organization to take a little bit more of a zoomed out view of what's really going on here, and perhaps you know, beyond maybe the internal battles of personalities is why they may be, you know, looking at do we need to make a change of some real consequence here via trade.
Kyle, let's look at the Canucks opponent tonight, the Montreal Canadiens. As you said, big national game on Amazon Prime, and the Habs playing some really good hockey recently. Won 7 of their last 9. They're at 500 points percentage now. You know, they beat a slew of impressive opponents on this recent road trip. What has started to go right for the Habs?
Yeah, I mean, the fact that Laine wasn't available for the last couple of games, but I mean, you know, you could argue that, you know, he's a one-dimensional guy, that, you know, if he's not, you know, on his off wing there on the power play, is he that effective of a player? Sure. But that guy has, we've seen in a short span here with Montreal, he can score goals, and it's a team that, could certainly have needed the help there offensively, and they've gotten it when he's been in the lineup. You know, they made the move for Carrier. He looks, you know, very much rejuvenated, and has just been a help on the back end. And, you know, you look at some of the players, like Kirby Dach was a guy that really struggled the first couple of months of the season. And I was a little leery to kind of go too harsh on the criticism that way, because he was coming off basically an entire lost season with, you know, the really bad knee injury and the pen, you know, the ensuing surgery that he had to repair everything that was going on there. But now you're seeing, you know, his fingerprints are over more games. Jake Evans been on a really, really nice run for them. And, you know, the story of Jakub Dobish here, the goaltender, I mean, it was clear that they just had lost some faith and trust in Caden Primo. But I know it's only two games, but that injects some life into the group here too. And I remember, you know, doing a couple of games of theirs in early November when things were really going poorly for them and they were down, you know, tumbled down into the bottom of the Eastern Conference. And Martin St. Louis was saying, you know, like, sometimes you've got to go through these stretches where it feels like you may be taking a step in the wrong direction, but once you can, if you can stick with it and come out on the other side, then, you know, it really is worth it. And, you know, as you say, they've been on a good run here of late, terrific road trip, you know, won 10 of 15 games here, I think, now, and certainly that doesn't make an entire season, but, you know, like, at least they've now put themselves back into the mix. And, you know, I think as things goes on, one of the big issues for them, you know, this year has been some of their worst performances have been at home. And so I think, you know, that's going to be continued to be something that's going to try to hammer down on and to have, you know, much better results in front of their home crowd. But, like, I just go back to, you know, Patrick Laine, and you know, you remember when Kovalev played there, like he could bring that crowd out of their seats, like in a way that not many other players can. Like that style of player where maybe there's moments defensively they can make you pull your hair out, but when they're clicking on the other end of the ice, like that crowd, that market and fan base, they salivate for that sort of stuff. So just the electricity when it comes to the relationship between, you know, player and the fans in such a short period of time, I think that adds and breathes life into everything too. And they just seem to be a different group here now where, you know, earlier in the year when things got tough later on in the game, they would kind of, it was their own mistakes that would prove to be their undoing. And now we're seeing them just kind of dig their heels in a lot more often and just be patient and finding a way to gut out some wins when maybe they didn't have it, or certainly, you know, nights early in the year where it would not have gone their way in the least. So all those things have played huge roles, I think, and then, you know, turning kind of what the narrative around them not too long ago was up on its head.
Yeah, and as you mentioned, you know, kind of hanging around at least in that Eastern Conference playoff race, and I guess more than that, because you look at it, that battle for the second wild card spot right now, Pittsburgh.
Oh, there's like seven teams.
Yeah, I mean, beyond belief that Pittsburgh is currently the team technically holding it down, you know, not by points percentage, but by points, which is remarkable given where they were. But, you know, as you said, basically seven teams. I mean, Montreal right in the thick of things. How would you handicap that race for that final wild card spot in the Eastern Conference?
Yeah, I think, you know, I felt that you know, Ottawa had really started to turn a corner, and now it's just like, what's going on with the goaltending here? That I'm just not sure about the future, but, you know, at least they're I know the last couple games wasn't great for them, but I think they had been playing, you know, a style that suggests that, you know, even if it's not Allmark, if it's a guy like Marilainen, or, you know, if Forsberg can find, you know, a pretty decent form again coming off of injury, at least they're playing a style in front of their goalies where they're giving them a chance to win more games. I had picked Detroit at the start of the year to get into the playoffs here. You know, they are in the middle of the Todd McClellan coaching bump. Is that sustainable? I think I need to see, you know, a little bit more. But it was interesting, you know, the point that Elliot made on the podcast, most recent episode that dropped today, that, you know, someone was telling him that when Derek Lalonde put out that statement about, you know, with you look at the young players they have in Detroit, you know, they've got a really bright future there. And I think that, you know, he said it in his mind just to give the fan base, you know, a bit of hope to say, you know, your team isn't too far off here from taking that next step that they're all waiting for. And I guess there's some of the older players in that locker room that took that as a bit of a slight. So has that helped, you know, fire fuel their turnaround in Motown? Maybe. But again, is it sustainable? I'm not sure. So, you know, barring the health and what's going on in net, I think, you know, Ottawa, I put in that conversation. I don't know if I believe in the Rangers here. After all, I see it go on and they can get it back onto the tracks again. Maybe. But between, you know, those teams is kind of where I'm leaning. And let's just see, you know, how much further Montreal can continue to surprise teams, because yeah, like Pittsburgh's there, as you know, but
yep.
As you say, the points percentage, like it's much more games than the rest, and I wonder how that catches up to them as we go along.
Kyle, great stuff. Really appreciate it. Enjoy the Canucks game tonight. I'm sure we'll talk again soon.
Yes, look forward to it. Thanks for having me, gents.
Of course, that is Kyle Bukauskas from Hockey Night in Canada and, of course, co-host of the 32 Thoughts podcast alongside Elliot Friedman, where the Canucks, of course, have been a very, very frequent topic of conversation recently. And I find it interesting, Drance. I mean, you know, Bukauskas obviously not pretending to be an insider or reporting anything, but we asked Woodley as well, you know, very similar questions like, do you actually believe this is possible? Is there more to this than just noise and smoke and speculation and all of that? And, you know, both guys kind of saying, well, look, it's gotten to this point. It certainly seems at least like there's more to it than just noise. And I still have trouble wrapping my head around, especially the in-season move, right? The idea of trading either of those guys in season. But I think they both make good points, which is the more you hear and the more it refuses to go away, the more the team struggles on the ice, the more real it becomes.
We are about to be deprived, by the way, of what would be the perfect play-in season in both divisions or both conferences.
Like, well, especially in the Eastern Conference.
I think the West, man. I think the West. Like, right now, if you had a play-in format, think about the conversation around this Canucks team. It would be like the last month has made them a play-in team.
Mm-hmm.
Their playoff run might last one or two games, right? I mean, it would be a totally different conversation, a higher stakes conversation. The race between the Avalanche and the Dallas Stars over the balance of the season would be must-watch television. And, like, you can't tell me that Calgary, Utah, St. Louis, like, basically competing for two spots. Can Anaheim catch up? Like, there's just way more storylines. The league's just leaving so much on the table, not just in terms of the actual play-in games, but in terms of having different cliffs and incentives that make all of these games feel more meaningful.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I think, we've had this argument, it's not an argument between you and me, but people react so negatively to it because it's like, don't reward these bad teams. And again, I think it's much more about punishing the seventh and the eighth teams, right? About putting real stakes because, you know,
properly rewarding the division winners.
In the whiteboard, I mean, as I said, the Canucks still have a 75% chance to make the playoffs per Dom's model, right? Like there's a good chance that, yes, this slump, this prolonged slump, or I shouldn't say good chance, but anyway, there's a chance that this prolonged slump, that all it ends up costing them is home ice in the first round. And that, I don't want to say that's nothing. That can be a really big deal, of course, but it's much less of a consequence, and as you said, than being forced to play like a one-game play-in in order just to make the first round would be, right? So yeah. There's a possibility they kind of skate past this.
Yeah, totally. And then going a very good possibility. I mean, I think that's the fat part of the bell curve. I do want to note, though, about Dom's model. The Vegas betting odds, Canucks are now at minus 200 to make the playoffs, mm-hmm. which is about a 66 implied probability. And most of the other projection models have them way lower than 75%. Like, Dom's model retains a lot of a very high, is still very high and actually out of step with market in terms of its projections on the Canucks. But that's both in terms of the gambling markets and the other projections models. Now, Dom's model usually ends the season as best in class, but I do think we may need to start qualifying it if Dom's projections continue to be this significant a Canucks outlier.
All right, we will take a break here. One more segment to go. I feel like I barely talked to you today, Drancer, because we've had the guests on in the tech. Don't worry, it's all right. But I'm excited. I'm excited to chat with you, and we'll hear from Rick Tocchet as well in the final segment here on Canucks Talk Sportsnet 650. Welcome back to Canucks Talk here on Sportsnet 650. Jamie Dodd, Thomas Drance here. Final segment of the show today. Drancer's on the road in Montreal covering the Canucks as they start a five-game road trip. I'm broadcasting live from the Kintec studio. Kintec, footwear and orthotics working together with you in step. 650. 650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. We got an open segment to finish here. We might not hear from Rick Tocchet because in Montreal, a lot of the questions from the Montreal media, focusing in on, you know, guys from Quebec, understandably, like Guillaume Brisebois, Vincent Desharnais, but not necessarily the most pertinent Canucks-related questions out there right now. So we'll see if we have time to hear from Rick Tocchet. But, Dranzer, I mean, I was joking on the other side, but, you know, we didn't really get you connected for the whiteboard. So, I mean, you haven't had a chance to kind of weigh in on this game tonight, the matchup with the Habs, and I think even more than that, the stakes of this road trip for the Canucks. And I think as so much of the conversation around this team, right, it's not just about what they're doing on the ice. It's about what could happen off the ice. And I guess that's part of the stakes as well. It's, hey, can they solidify their hold on a playoff spot? Can they kind of, with Quinn Hughes potentially back in the lineup as soon as tonight, maybe getting Elias Pettersson back soon here, can they start to look like the team we thought they might be at the beginning of the year? And then the flip side of that is, well, if that doesn't happen, what does that mean for the potential big off-ice moves? But, you know, no matter how you slice it, this feels like the start of a really, really big segment for the Canucks.
Yeah, it's a huge segment. So, look, let's start with the news, you know, the stuff that everyone's talking about, which is what led off Hockey Night in Canada, and, you know, the ex-teammates popping out of the woodwork that we discussed yesterday, and the idea that the Canucks, you know, could trade one, could trade both, could trade neither, you know, as sort of routes forward here. You know, at this point, this story has lived and died and lived and died and lives again. You know, like, it keeps getting resurrected. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, given that, and given the fact that it's often been club leadership, right, that have resuscitated it directly, right? Like, it's been an Alvin interview that resuscitates it, or it's been commentary from the captain and the head coach that has you know, breathed life into the story at times. You know, I think it's hard to ignore sort of the fact pattern here, which is that, you know, I think the club is fine with this being a talking point. I think the club probably wants a message sent that the effort needs to be more consistent, right? And that there might be consequences if it's not. And, you know, we've known for months, I've been talking about it for months, and then Alvin talked about it directly, that there was concern internally about this club's inability to string together nights of playing the right way. I suspect that a lot of what we're hearing about now, and a lot of the he said, she said that we're talking about and obsessing over, which, by the way, I'm so sick of. Like, I find it exceedingly dull. But I think a lot of what we're sort of talking about, or the environment that's been created around it, like, I do think it's a reaction to how this club has played and the inconsistent form and battle level on a night-to-night basis. And so I think that's where we should be. And honestly, not that we're going to leave it. We're obviously going to touch whatever we're going to touch on whatever Canucks fans are talking about and obsessing over. That's the purpose of this program and what we're going to do. But, you know, I do think that we should keep in mind that, like, this is a vaporous story that people are obsessed with, in part because they want to project into the future. And the future will be determined ultimately by performance on the ice, right? When we talk about this Canucks team, what's been different this year than last, right? The defensive play hasn't been as good. Okay, we know that. The club has still been pretty fortunate in terms of the bounces, but they haven't been historically fortunate in terms of the bounces. Their 5-on-5 game has been good, frankly, when they've got all their bodies in the lineup. But I think when you're talking about, like, what's the headline reason that this Canucks season has been underwhelming to this point, last year, all of Hronek, Besser, Miller, Connor Garland, Pettersson, Hughes played 81 or 82 games. And the games that the guys who played 81 missed was a game in Winnipeg where they elected to leave some guys at home, right? This year, you know, Demko missed the first extended stretch of the season. Miller missed 10 games. Brock Besser sustained that hit from Tanner Jeannot and missed a couple of weeks. Pettersson's been out of the lineup the last four games. Hughes has been out of the lineup the last four games and played that fifth one hurt against the San Jose Sharks. And so really you're left with, like, Garland as the stability guy. Ironically too, I asked Garland today about whether or not, you know, just sort of getting a sense of what the noise has been like for players in the room. And his joke was, well, I haven't been in trade rumors. that's been really nice. no, he was definitely kidding. But, you know, the point being that somewhat inconceivably, it's like Garland who's emerged as this like paragon of stability, both in terms of his availability and the fact that, you know, this guy who spent most of his first two seasons, the moment he signed, as he once memorably put it, the moment I signed, I was getting traded. You know, he's been like the one guy for whom rumors have kind of not in any way touched over the course of this year. So there's sort of a funny twist there. So I think you start with that. And then I do think you come to Pettersson and Miller, and not for the drama, you know, sort of reasons, but for the reasons that neither has played at an elite level, right? I mean, at the time that Pettersson, we know Pettersson sagged down the stretch, but at the time that he signed his contract in, what was it, like early March, late February of last season, he was on pace for 100 points, right? Miller hit 100 points. He was also on pace for 100 points at the time. Like, they had two centermen who were just dominant. Dominant forces on a night-to-night basis for the majority of the season, even if Pettersson did ultimately hit a snag in terms of his form down the stretch. That has not been the case at all this year, right? And not only is Pettersson unlikely to play tonight and has missed the past four games, but, you know, what's his scoring pace at? Something more like 75, 70, right? It's been quiet around him. There have been moments where he's been able to take over games. He got off the schneid and really looked great against the San Jose Sharks and then immediately gets injured, which sucks. I mean, you hate to see that just from a sympathy for the player perspective. And then JT Miller, you know, I mean, when was the last time he beat a goaltender?
October.
October 26th. Like, we know the date. It was 21 games ago. And, you know, I actually think there's a funny thing going on here where people, I think, have been so focused on this story, the extraneous stuff off the ice, and then I think there have been a few, like, loud mistakes for Miller, or, like, loud clips, like that line change, that turnover slash line change clip against the Predators that have gone viral and caused people to miss that in some ways, in Hughes and Pettersson's absence, I think Miller stepped up. He's not scoring, like, the big goal, necessarily, and there have been games like that Seattle game, his ice time is down, the mistake against the Predators, but there have been games where, you know, he's shown up with fire in his belly, indisputable, in terms of the, you know, physical edge that he's brought, and honestly, the way the Canucks are actually pretty successfully controlling play in his minutes since Hughes and Pettersson went out of the lineup. I mean, that's indispensable given the impact of those non-Hughes minutes on this team's performance. Like, to have Miller's minutes be minutes that this team is reliably winning, and, you know, they've outscored their opponents 3-1 in Miller's 5-on-5 minutes since Christmas. They're controlling 60%+ of shot attempts. They've outshot their opponents 29-18. I mean, you sort of look across the board, like, there's an argument to be made that Miller's best stretch of this season as a two-way player has been during this, like, reduced ice time, shorter shifts. Some loud errors, but also an awful lot of good stuff that has helped this team at least grind out, like, 3 points in their four games since Christmas, as opposed to really falling flat, right? Like, as opposed to really having, like, 1 point or 0 points in four games where they'd be in a little bit more trouble, where they'd be outside the playoff bar, where they'd have fallen behind Calgary already. And so, you know, It's a interesting moment around specifically JT, where on the whole, he's sort of doing the odd years thing again, right? Where he follows up elite seasons where he plays like one of the 10 best forwards in the sport with, you know, one of those seasons where he plays like one of the top 60 forwards in the sport. You know, but within that, as the noise is cranked up around him, I do kind of think there's signs that he's grinding back into form here. And I think you can say the same of the team, frankly. Like, they have survived better than I would have thought. And I know this is, like, I don't want to lower the bar too much. They haven't been good by any means. But I really thought that the bottom would fall out without Hughes. And it has. Don't get me wrong. They've scored 7 goals in the 4 games. Hughes has been absent. I mean, they are praying for scoring chances at this point, much less goals. But 6-6 is the scoreboard at 5-on-5. And, you know, it's more like 49 or 48% in terms of their control of shot attempts and shots across those 4 games. Yes, against relatively meager competition. But that's not getting caved in. I was thinking that they were going to get caved in. I thought they were in real trouble. And they've been in trouble. And they've competed hard. And so, you know, we take all of this together. We take all of this together. And by the way, I do think there's another subheader here, which is that I do think the club's ability to mine, you know, the Kiefer Sherwood, Pew Suter, Teddy Bluger level value contributor, right? I just think like they probably got like a B minus this summer.
Yeah.
Given that DeHarnay and Dan Heinen haven't really fit, but DeBrusk and Kiefer Sherwood and Lankinen have been good. More like a B. Maybe it's a solid B given how good Lankinen and Sherwood
but have it's
been.
Down from like but an A plus the previous year, right?
An A plus plus.
Yeah.
Like they were 99th percentile outcome fleshing out the depth of their roster on the free agent scrap heap last season, and now they're like, yeah, they did a creditable job, an above average job, a really good job even, but the gap between those two is massive, right? Especially when, you know, two of the misses or two of the relative misses, right? Danton Heinen and DeHarnay are like multi-year deals worth $2+ million each, right? I mean, we're going to see Phil DiGiuseppe surely play alongside Miller and Besser again tonight.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, isn't that the fit that Heinen was brought in to do? Like, isn't that
that's where he started.
Should be doing at a higher level?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, so, you know, I do think that's part of it, too. There's an element to which there's been pieces added to this roster that just don't really feel like they fit. And I think you can sort of extrapolate that out, too, to the entire puck-moving off-the-back-end issue. So, you know, as I think about this news, I'm really trying to bring it back to hockey and think about this team as much as possible. I still think this is a team with a higher gear than it looks like at the moment. You know, I think people writing this team off for dead are probably in for a surprise over the second half. I think this is a team with enough skill and enough ceiling to get back on track and, you know, have a really successful stretch run and maybe even peak later on in the spring. But I do see the path, especially because I'm holding all this Utah Hockey Club stock and have no intention of selling it off. Like, I do see a path for this to continue to go pear-shaped, especially, you know, with continued injuries like Dakota Joshua now hitting IR, you know, that have them going into, for example, like they're going to be at a significant size disadvantage, for example, against Washington on Wednesday. Like, it's going to be notable without Joshua in the lineup, in my opinion, especially up front. So, you know, all of these things effectively, like, pool, right, and eliminate this team's margin for error. And they had enough margin for error from their hot start, but they've kind of spent it. And with games against eight of the top 10 teams over the next 10, like, yeah, by the time we get to the Four Nations tournament, we're going to have a really good sense of what this team's looking at over the balance. And I absolutely think both, you know, this team is going to be scraping to make the playoffs, and this team gets back into the mix with, you know, LA and is sort of racing for the third spot in the Pacific. I think both of those are well within like the fat part of the bell curve, a realistic range of outcomes.
Yeah, just on the injuries. I mean, a texter sent this in earlier in the show, but basically, you know, their top six players, Demko, Miller, Hughes, Hronek, Besser, Pettersson, they haven't been on the ice once together this season, right? Because Hronek got injured before Demko came back, and that's before you even factor in all of the other absences that, you know, that has had them missing multiple of those guys at the same time. But they haven't played one game with their top six players on the ice together this season. And I think you're right that, you know, I don't think you're not trying to spin, oh, they'll be fine, don't worry. Like, there's absolutely a world where they miss the playoffs, where or they're very, very down to the wire to make the playoffs. It is, even as much as we all know intellectually, oh, this team looks so much different with Quinn Hughes out of the lineup and Elias Pettersson as well. And, you know, we all see how much they've struggled to generate scoring chances and goals with those guys out. Again, especially Quinn Hughes. And we can all kind of know that, but there's still like a visceral reaction to seeing the team look like that for a stretch of four games. And I think that's what people are caught up in now, right? Everyone knows that it's largely because Quinn Hughes is out of the lineup, but it's still like, oh my gosh, you sit down and watch the team and look, you know, how ineffective they looked on that end against Nashville, and it can be hard to kind of mentally adjust for that when you're projecting what's going to happen for the rest of the season. And I think you're right to try to bring it, the whole thing, back to the hockey story, because on Miller and Pettersson, it is a hockey story. Like, there's an off-ice thing too, and it's easy to get caught up in the salaciousness of all of that, but fundamentally, neither guy is performing anywhere close to the level that they're capable of, right? And, I, you know, I've heard a lot of people say something along the lines of, like, oh, it would be almost unimaginable for a team to trade these players or one of these players because of an off-ice thing. And I get that. I think that's right. It would be unimaginable. But we're not just talking about off-ice stuff. To say nothing of the team's performance, if both of these guys were clicking at a ridiculously high level, we're not talking about their relationship at all. We didn't at all last year. It never came up. Because as you said, up until, you know, March 1st, basically, the two players were dominant. They were on pace for 100 points. They were having fantastic individual seasons. And if they both get back to that, you're right. The issue will go away in a real, real hurry. In addition to the team all of a sudden having much better results as well. The JT Miller stuff, you know, in Pettersson's absence is interesting. I think one of his strongest games was, you know, in Calgary where they lost. So it's kind of those things where when you play well in a loss, you don't necessarily get a lot of credit from the fans, right? Because the result ultimately wasn't there. And I think that's gone a long way to kind of coloring the perception of what he's done. But if Pettersson is able to find a little bit of that spark that maybe he had against San Jose when he gets back into the lineup, if Miller is able to build on that, and all of a sudden, you know, they have those top two centers in the lineup again, for all the people that are tired of the story, that's what's going to make it go away. And then the consequences thing, I just think is fascinating. And, you know, you, as you said, like, look, they're sending a message here, perform better or there will be consequences. And as anyone who is a parent of young children knows, when you threaten consequences, you have to be willing to follow through, or else it becomes hollow really, really quickly. You got to be able to follow through. Like, if you say there's not going to be any dessert if X happens, and X happens, there better be no dessert that night, or else you're never going to be able to threaten it again. And I guess that's my question is, okay, when is the tipping point where all of a sudden consequences become not just in play, but almost mandatory, almost something like, well, we see it's not happening here, so we're going to have to go to the next step. And again, to bring it back to this East Coast road trip, this feels like the kind of stretch that's going to tell us a lot in that regards.
For sure. And look, I also think the reaction and the negativity to how this team has played comes back to the parallel paths discussion that we were having a lot more before all the fires started raging mm-hmm. around this hockey club in the first couple months of the season, right? The visceral reaction to the non-Hughes minutes, I don't think makes sense if our question is, can this team make the playoffs, right? Because, well, Hughes might be back tonight, and if he's not, he's almost certainly going to be yep. back on Wednesday. And then 40% of this team's 5-on-5 ice time is Hughes minutes, and this team is basically elite in those minutes, and that'll hide all manner of sins. It's not a reason they'll miss the playoffs. It could be, however, a reason why this team, if it's not fixed, right, if the non-Hughes minutes don't become an awful lot more dynamic, an awful lot more threatening, if this team doesn't find a way to have some venom without Hughes on the ice, you know, it is a reason why they're not going to be able to get by the Oilers. Mm-hmm. Right? It is going to be a reason that might hold them back against Vegas and Dallas and, you know, some of the elite teams in the Western Conference. It is a reason that they might not win the Stanley Cup or might not even be a contender. They're certainly not valued as a contending team by Vegas or the gambling markets at the moment, right? They're very much a fringe outside the top 10 in Stanley Cup odds. And so, you know, in some ways we've kind of, and I think it's a testament to how poorly the season has gone or how much has gone wrong for this team this season. Let me put it that way instead, Jamie, that we've abandoned the parallel paths conversation because the conversation has needed to be more urgent. Mm-hmm. The audiences, like our listeners, Canucks fans' appetite has been for more of the nitty-gritty day-to-day, the oh my god, sky is falling, what's happening sort of conversation. And I think the conversation around this team has taken on that tenor just because the performance has been far more mid than it has been inspiring. And I think that's also the reaction to, you know, some of the bigger, more tectonic questions being asked about this core group in particular, right? Is, you know, fans, I think, are like, they understand the odds of winning the Stanley Cup. Canucks fans in particular have a fatalistic understanding that it may never be their day, right? Now, of course, that's not true, but that's certainly how it's felt for much of this franchise's, you know, 50 plus years of existence. And you know, last year at least, I think, gave people almost that sensation of like, okay, you know, I bought in on the ground floor of this core and it's been disappointing to this point, but there's reasons for it, you know, and now it's going to be on the up and up. And I think fans have now had that feeling with this core group so many times, right? You had the 2020 bubble and then the disappointment that came after. You had the Boudreaux bump, and then the disappointment that came after. And then you had last season, and last season really felt real. I mean, look, they pushed the Oilers to seven games, people say, ignoring that no team has ever lost a playoff series with a higher shooting percentage than the Canucks did, having, you know, effectively lobotomized Stuart Skinner mid-series. You know, and now it's like, oh, this again. But I do think that this is a distinct period of time. I do think that this team actually has a floor in a way they didn't the other times that the football got removed by Lucy before, you know, the Canucks fan Charlie Brown could kick it. Like, I do think that this is distinct. I think it's more normal. It's more within the realm of, hey, good team gets hit by incredible spate of injuries over 41 games, and the fact that they're a good team has allowed them to survive it, you know, as opposed to undoing the season. Like, if this season is going to get undone, it's going to be from this point on, right? Where this team is positioned right now really isn't a crisis, even though we're talking about it like it is.
By the way, on the point of Canucks fans having that fatalistic understanding of the chances of winning the Stanley Cup, my eldest daughter is a burgeoning Canucks fan, and I was talking to her about the team the other day, and I told her they'd never won the Stanley Cup, and she was surprised, and I confidently asserted in the moment that they would win it in her lifetime. And then immediately in my head, I was like, what have I done? Have I just lied? Have I lied to her? I don't feel good about this prediction at all. So I'm hoping they've got I've given them a long runway there. She's six, but hopefully I didn't lie to my daughter when I asserted that. But that's a little bit of that fatalism hanging around there that I immediately had doubts about making that promise to her. All right, that does it for us today. As mentioned, it's the Canucks and the Montreal Canadiens in Montreal on Amazon Prime, not on TV. So if you can't watch, of course, you can listen to Batch and Randeep on the call here on Sportsnet 650. Dan Riccio, Satyar Shah, they're coming up with Canucks Central. Don Taylor and Frank Saravalli, so a couple of guests you're going to want to hear weigh in on all of the stuff going on around the Canucks right now. Those guys will join Reach and Sat. They'll have the pregame show as well. We'll be back tomorrow to break it all down here on Canucks Talk Sportsnet 650.